At the Decluttered Hub, we are so proud to have a community that completely understands neurodiversity. Whilst we recognise the frustration it has or still does cause for many people, we're all about embracing the challenges and learning to build an environment that helps people live their most fulfilled lives. This week, it's Neurodiversity Appreciation Week. So what better week could there be to welcome not one, but two amazing guests? Hester and Kelly Granger and their children are all neurodiverse. And in today's podcast, we're going to dive into their story.
You're listening to the Declutter Hub podcast, bringing you tried and tested, no-nonsense tips and advice from the leading experts in decluttering and organising your home. Now here's your host, Leslie Spellman.
Hello and welcome, listeners. I'm Leslie. We're delighted you're here to join us as part of your decluttering journey. So whether you're brand new today or have been listening in for ages, we want to say thank you so much for being here. It means so much to Ingrid and I that you turn up every week to listen to and support us while we talk all things decluttering and organising. We'd love to help more people with their quest for a clutter-free home, and our podcast is a fantastic way for people to be inspired to take action. We have a favour to ask. If you like what you hear, be sure to hit the follow, subscribe or like button on your podcast player. Share us with your friends or share your thoughts on the podcast by leaving a review. So welcome, Hester and Kelly. Thank you so much for being on the Declutter Hub podcast. It's very exciting to have two people here.
Well, I won't get one free here. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Nice to see you.
Oh, it's so brilliant to see you. So we were just before we came live, I was chatting to you and saying we've done quite a lot before on the podcast for ADHD, which goes down an absolute storm because many people within our communities live with some kind of neurodiversity, diagnosed in some instances, going through a diagnosis with others and kind of suspecting perhaps they have with other people, might be their children, might be them, might be other family members. So neurodiversity is definitely a thing within the Declutter Hub community. But what I loved about you two is you've taken it much deeper. You have your own consultancy. You're going out there. You're talking. You're flying the flag for neurodiversity. And so I really wanted to sort of tap into your expertise. When I was doing the research for this podcast, I went onto your Instagram, Hester, and the first post that I saw really resonated with you, and it was about something that you had been told as a child when you were choosing your GCSEs. So do you want to tell us that story? Because it really hit home for me.
Yeah, I think it was, I remember it being my GCSEs, and without knowing I had ADHD, I wasn't diagnosed till I was 43. I kind of realised looking back now that I'd found ways to kind of make life a little bit easier. So I thought, well, I'm not going to go for the really crazy hard GCSEs. I'm not super academic and I really wanted to do drama. I wanted to be a TV presenter since I was really, really young. And I went up to my teacher and I said, so I'm going to choose drama. And she went, no, you're not. And I was like, well, what do you mean you're not? And she said, no, you don't need to be any more confident. You're already really chatty. You already speak a lot. Like, let's give other people a chance who need it. And it was like my GCSE options, like they're quite serious, important things. And it just kind of made me think that as, you know, people with ADHD, even from way back then, you know, you get these negative comments. I think it's something like before a child is 12, they have 20,000 more negative comments if they've got ADHD than their peers from other adults or teachers, etc., or parents. And it's just those things that kind of just make you think, what do you mean I've like got too much confidence, or I don't need to do drama GCSE? And I didn't do it. And I look back and I just think, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. I wasn't going to become some actor or something like that. But it just sort of, you just wonder how many other children undiagnosed with ADHD are kind of sent on a different path because teachers just didn't realise.
Yeah, because it's looking at your personality and saying that your personality effectively is not good enough, or it's too bold, or it's too quiet or whatever. And I think it's probably because things were very misunderstood. I mean, you know, I've talked on the podcast before to my son, he's younger than you are. And it was still misunderstood then when he was a teenager as well, because he was very similar. He was kind of always talking. And some people loved that about him and some people loathed that about him. And it would very much depend on who he was dealing with. So, but I think certainly those, that judgment is there from a very early age, and that takes you through. Mm-hmm. So Tell us a little bit then about your diagnosis and yours as well, Kelly. How did that unfold then? When did you think that something's not right here, or something, I'm different or whatever? How did you decide to go for a diagnosis?
I guess I'll start with that, shall I? I guess it was when we were going through the process with our children, and this was back in 2019, that we kind of reached that stage where we were told, actually, have you thought about autism for both of them? And it'd been ongoing for a number of years with our son. It started with kind of his eating habits, his kind of lack of variety in what he was eating. And things just started to resonate with me. And I remember a particular one time my wife, she's here. Esther sent me a text message. I was away with work at the time, outside of the UK. And it just said, here's some feedback from the psychologist. What do you think? And I kind of read this message and I thought, okay, that's interesting. And I replied back to, hold on, is this about our son or is this about me? Because it sounds like me. Isn't this what we're all like? And she kind of said, well, no, we're not. And I think that's when the penny dropped for me. And I came home, we talked about it, and we decided that I should pursue a diagnosis as well. Because for me, I need to be either 100% in the know or not. So I couldn't just kind of handle the fact that maybe I'm autistic. Oh, well, I had to know for sure. And if I was autistic, okay, that may sort of help me answer some of the many questions I had over the years. If I wasn't, then maybe I kind of still need to keep looking. What is it? And that's kind of where my diagnosis journey started. And we kind of went through the process. I spoke to my GP, talked to her about why I think I might be autistic. She could see that I'd clearly done my research and the process has been through our children. So she took it seriously. Mm. And some GPs don't. And that's why I think if you're going to your GP, you need to have, you know, be armed with lots of information and knowledge, because then they know you've taken it seriously. And then we went from there. And, you know, at the end of the year, 2019, I received my formal diagnosis of being autistic. And then a year later with ADHD.
Right. So you're both then, Kelly, you're saying you've got ADHD and autism.
I'm autistic and have ADHD, yeah.
Okay. And Hester, you've just got ADHD.
I've got, yeah, and that's exactly what the kids say. You've just got ADHD.
Sorry. How disappointing that you only have one.
They're the special gang, aren't you? Yeah. You used to call yourselves the A team. But yeah, and the children were diagnosed with ADHD. You know, there's often a lot of, I hate the word comorbidities, so we'll call it co-conditions, yeah. But there's a huge overlap on the neurodiversity spectrum. So the chances are you don't just have one condition. Like if you've got a neurodivergent brain, the chances are you may well have another condition. So being autistic and having ADHD is not uncommon. And then it was during lockdown, wasn't it, that we were sort of homeschooling as everybody else was, and we were just sort of noticing that the processing wasn't quite there. They're both, India and Hudson, our children are 12, Hudson's 12 and India's 14 now, and they're both super bright, super switched on, but just sort of the homeschooling, we were just like, you know, I remember you doing some maths with HUD and you going over it again, and sort of Hudson just like, what? And we just realised that just the, almost the ADHD of the sort of slightly inattentive away with the fairies just was there. So we ended up getting him diagnosed and India at the same time, didn't we? Because there's a lot of similarities. And then during the assessment, the psychologist said to me, so you've got ADHD. And I was like, no. And she was like, oh, maybe you should look into it. And that was the first time I'd genuinely ever thought about it. I just thought, I didn't feel different like you felt different. I just assumed everybody felt like me. And then I realised they don't. So here we are. So yeah, I was diagnosed at 43. You were diagnosed as autistic at 44, weren't you? Yeah. And ADHD at 45.
And so do you think having that knowledge now in your armoury for both yourselves and your children has made you do anything differently?
Yeah, I think looking back, parenting, we've always parented in a really like autism-friendly way without even realizing it. We're both fairly chilled, aren't we? And we're both just like, okay, if you don't want to wear socks today, that's fine. If I need to rewash that again because it doesn't feel soft enough, or if you need a different teaspoon or whatever it is, it's like we've always sort of done that. So I think looking back, we've been very neurodivergent friendly. But I think the having that knowledge, and like you said, you just wanted to know 100%, yeah, didn't you?
Yeah,
one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think it's helped us knowing, because we know ourselves and our children, so kind of we've almost then increased our understanding and awareness of neurodiversity, of autism and of ADHD. So we kind of understand what the characteristics can be, what some of the traits, what the challenges are for them, but also that they're amazing children. So we kind of know that, and I think that helps us where we kind of almost, we talk about kind of picking your battles. So we're not too rigid in our thinking and our kind of, how we parent them, because we know actually some things aren't going to work for them that might work for other parents and other families. And you've almost got to kind of parent your children the way that it suits your family. I think we kind of go through the process, don't we, of thinking, well, how did our parents parent us? And then, well, our friends parent their children like this. Well, we should be parenting our children like them as well, because that's what they're all doing. But actually, it doesn't work for each family. And I think if each family's kind of looked at themselves and thought, well, what is our family? What is our makeup? What are our children like? Let's family or parent in the best way that helps everybody thrive, rather than, well, this is the rule book. We must follow the rule book. And I think we kind of caught in the trap, particularly today, in that we're very rigid in kind of rule books, and this is how parenting books tell us you should parent. Whereas I think if we went back to our parents, you didn't have that. People just parented their children, and that's what it was. We've almost got caught in this trap of there's a rule book to it now,
There's a
and
book
if
on
we don't
everything.
follow it, our children are going to fail. And we're really fearful of, well, if we don't parent our children right, they're not going to grow up the right way. There's lots of ways they can fail, but I don't think there was that in the past. So I think we need to be a bit more relaxed, don't we? And I
Yeah,
think that's
definitely.
helped us understand, because we can go, ah, oh, that's why. So let's not be too hard on that,
And also we've
because
learned
that's the reason. Yeah,
from our
for ourselves.
childhood.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
there's a lot of that going on. I'm always saying to my daughter, she'll interrupt a lot, and I'm always like, I get it, I do it all the time, even now as an adult. All my son's still, quite scared of the dark and things. I'm like, yeah, 46, still scared of the dark. And I remember not being able to tell my mum that I couldn't go upstairs on my own because I thought something terrible was going to happen, which I now know is catastrophizing, which is a huge part of and like intrusive thoughts for ADHD. And I didn't know any of that. So I think we're quite almost sympathetic as well, aren't we? Because we're like, yeah, we get it. So we're quite chilled, aren't we, I think.
So interesting. I think one of the things, if it's okay with you, one of the things that I saw on your Instagram was that you talk about how your ADHD showed up this week. And I just thought it was really, it's just so relatable for so many people. So if it's okay, I'd love to chat about how your ADHD shows up, Hester, and then how your autism shows up, then Kelly, if that's all right. Just like a few kind of snippets of things that happen in a week, and you go, oh, that's why that is. And then we're going to go a little bit deeper after the break. But Hester, do you want to get started in terms of, so what sort of things, how does your ADHD, you've shared a couple of things, but just delve a little bit deeper into some of the things that your ADHD does in your life.
I think it's really important to share these things. Firstly, I have to say, it takes a lot of courage to go, oh my God, how long did I lose my phone for yesterday? Like 20
Quite a
minutes,
while, 20, 25 minutes,
25
and he was in the house.
And I was just like, it might, and then you like retrace your steps, and we were on live 360 checking I'd not lost it. And that's quite standard practice. There was a really great example I shared on Instagram where we, ages ago, we got this go-kart. I won this go-kart randomly in a competition, like 10 years ago, 11 years ago. A little tiny bit of it pinged off in the garage somewhere, and we've thought, oh, we'll find it. Like 6 years later, we're like, we've still not found that bit. Really can't use the go-kart because the wheel will fall off. Finally worked out what the piece was. We took it, went to Halfords, didn't we? And they were like, this is the piece. It cost like £2, took you about 3 minutes to fix, and our son's back on the go-kart. And I was like, that's such a good example of ADHD and going, oh my gosh, this is going to take so long. And there's almost that guilt and that shame attached to a lot of ADHD stuff. Like I can see something on the stairs that needs to go upstairs or on the floor, and I'm just literally like, I'll drop something and I'll be like, I've not got the energy to pick that up. And we don't live in squalor or anything, but it's almost that thing where you're just like, I can see it. And I'm just looking at it, thinking, why can't I pick that up? Washing is a huge one. How many times a week does our washing get respun and
A
recycled?
lot. We put it in, we forget about it, we then have to put it on again the next day, we forget about it, put it on the next day,
I think our
and it
record's
goes
like
on
4 days.
something like that.
Like it's all lovely and clean, and we wash it every time. It's
Get
just,
there in the end, yeah.
yeah, but it's just that kind of ways of it showing up is just. Can be quite exhausting. And like I'm an ADHD coach and often say to my clients, it's okay that these things happen, because actually then we look at everything else we have achieved. We've achieved loads this week and last week, but it's those kind of micro guilt, micro feelings with ADHD that comes, that you're just like, oh my God, or I'll say really stupid things to people, won't I? Like really random, like lots of examples of just really, and we're just like, afterwards, I'm like, oh my God, why did I say that? And now I know what it is, I'm fine with it. And I'm just like, that was me. There we go. Hope they don't think I'm that random. But it is what it is. You can't do anything about it.
No. And I think the point about, we need to talk about it more, because if you take Hester and myself, we weren't diagnosed until we were kind of early mid 40s, and we had no idea. Others may have done around us, we don't know, but nobody ever mentioned it. And I think until you start hearing other people talking about it and their traits and characteristics and the challenges, but also the things that they're really good at, that's when other people go, oh my God, hold on, that's me. And they almost have this kind of aha moment and they go, I just thought everybody was like that. You know, like me at work, I had certain challenges at work and I just assumed that everybody else in my office struggled with the same things, but they were just really much better at hiding it than I was. And I thought, God, they're good at hiding this. They must be really struggling underneath and have loads of anxiety. They didn't, but I thought they did. And it wasn't until the diagnosis I kind of started to unpick things and go, oh wow, okay, so that's me and that's other people. So I think the more you talk about it, the more people go, oh, I had no idea. I now need to go on a journey and find out for myself. And I think that's why talking about it is really, really good, but also giving examples of what are some of the challenges? What are some of the strengths? What are some of the things that affect you day to day? And then people go, oh, wow, I just thought everybody was the same, but we're not.
I think it's so important, and it's interesting that you hadn't really thought about it until you went through your diagnoses with your children, which is very common as well. And then the kind of light bulbs start to go on. A lot of people come into our communities, come in because of clutter, because of disorganization in their home. I've been working with people for 13 years in their home, and I've worked with people with ADHD, but it's only very recently that I would feel confident enough with a client to go, have you thought about the fact that you may be neurodivergent and that might be what's causing some of your problems? And why don't you go and look at that? Because it was kind of this thing that was, it would have been considered to be rude to raise. I wouldn't do that with everybody. It would only be if it felt appropriate and how close I was to them. But it felt rude almost to say something like that or to raise it. But I think in our community now, people, because it's so widely spoken about and because it's so prevalent in our communities with so many people, the light bulbs are going on and people are like, oh, I get it. But so that might come from a diagnosis with your children. It might come from being in a community where people understand. And as soon as you've got that empathy and that coming together, it makes you feel so much braver to then go, okay. We talk a lot about kindness as well. And you need to know that people with ADHD or other kinds of neurodiversity are brilliant at other things. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean to say that your life's over because you've got this thing. You're not great at that bit. But you're really good at this bit, and it's about finding the balance, and it's trying to kind of smooth the edges off a little bit of the things that you're not so good at, and enhance the ones that finding that balance. So, yeah, I know it's I love what it's become, that the awareness now is there. We're only just getting there, of course we are. There's still people who, there's a backlash as well. People like, what a load of nonsense. All these people, there's so many people with ADHD now, not understanding how much of a big impact that's having on the people that are finally seeing the light a little bit in terms of their diagnosis. So for me, it can only be a good thing, but it is about having that knowledge and trying to work stuff out, as you say.
I think there's also that balance, just to really quickly jump in. There's that balance. Just because you've left your washing on and three times a week doesn't then mean you've got ADHD. Just because you lose your phone a lot doesn't mean you have ADHD. You need to have all these sort of examples and awareness from before the age of about 11 or 12. I was told I had baby brain. It's like the kids were like 10 at this point. I was like, I haven't got baby brain. But the executive function is a huge challenge. And so I'm not surprised at all that there'll be a huge amount of people who are really struggling with the clutter and everything, because it takes us a lot to make sure we don't live like that, doesn't it? Because it doesn't serve us at all to have loads of clutter around, but it's quite easy with you end up with little piles that are growing around the house, really.
And particularly is that, a lot of people in our communities are a little bit older. We've got a lot of women in our communities as well. Masking is a big thing, isn't it, for women? People have very much been used to masking for many, many years and finding their own strategies and their own ways to cope with things. And so yeah. What about, Kelly, autism? So how does that show up in your week? I'd love to know, because it's something that I have worked with people with autism. And as with every person, what I say, the jobs that we do, there's no one size fits all. Just because someone's got ADHD, just because someone's got autism, there are some strategies that are fairly common. But a person is a person and they present in a different way. And so, but what kind of things have shown up for you and how do you manage to kind of counterbalance those?
Yeah, I guess where do I start? I mean, the first thing I would say is we like to refer to as kind of autistic people
Okay,
rather
sorry.
than with or have autism because we can't
Okay.
catch autism. It's not like a virus. So it's kind of, you're born with it. So, for me, there are many, many things. And it really depends on the day, the situation I'm in, the levels of anxiety I'm at. But I think for me, anxiety plays a massive part in my life day to day. I'm anxious about everything. you know, from the minute I wake up, when I do talks, I talk to people about, you know, on an anxiety level or stress level, if you think of it kind of 0 to 10, 10 being the highest, a neurotypical person will wake up and maybe throughout the day, they'll be on a 2 or 3 on the scale. And they'll have kind of elements of stress or anxiety throughout the day and go to a 4 or 5, and then come back down again. If you're autistic, more often than not, you wake up at an 8 or a 9 because you're really trying to think, well, what is going to happen today? How am I going to control what my day is going to bring? Who am I going to meet? What are they going to say to me? What am I going to say back to them? And then for me, I'm working out different scenarios for different situations. If I know I've got a meeting with somebody, I'm then thinking forward about trying to pre-plan and pre-prepare. What are they going to ask me? Okay, if they ask me this, my answer is going to be that. They're then going to ask me a question, follow-up question like that on my answer, so I need to have another answer. So I'm almost coming up with lots of things to try and control my day. And then if the day doesn't go as according to my plan that I've kind of planned, it's incredibly frustrating and I get really anxious about it. And it could be something really minor to somebody else, like we might go shopping. And we've said, so, well, we're going to 3 shops. Yeah. And we get to the shopping center and we've done 3 shops. And in my head, I'm thinking, great, we're going now. And Hester might turn around and go, actually, I just want to go there and there just to check something out. And I just can't cope with that. I'm like, but we're going to do 3. And for a lot of people, it might sound really trivial. But for me, because that's the way my brain works, I've almost psyched myself up to go into 3 stores. And it goes. So kind of anxiety leading to that kind of planning, that having to be organized all the time. Everything kind of has to be perfect, not just in the things that I do, but the things that Hester and the family do. So if they do something that's not perfect, that's really frustrating.
Which happens a lot.
Which happens a lot, yeah. But I don't do anything perfect either, but I need to try and make things perfect. And you can probably imagine that's incredibly tiring, both physically and mentally, because I'm constantly trying to strive for this perfection every single day. And I talk about kind of my autistic brain and my ADHD brain, and they almost kind of fight with each other. Because my autistic brain wants to be perfection, organized, structured, routines. My ADHD brain says, oh, we'll just leave it to the last minute. We'll do it then. And if I do that, it makes my autism brain even worse. So the anxiety goes up. So almost I can't win. Things like, you know, social communication. I don't enjoy one-to-one communication. You know, when I'm working and I talk to large groups or audiences, I don't have to speak to one person. So I can just talk to the room. Right. Whereas one-to-one I find quite difficult because trying to think of questions to ask. And it ends up being an interview, if I'm honest. I'm interviewing that person rather than having like an everyday conversation because I've thought of 4 or 5 questions in my back pocket that I'll pull out after every time they answer. So it's things like that. It's, you know, sometimes I can be a bit blunt, a bit too honest.
I never, ever ask him how I look. If I am not loving, like, not in a mean way, you're never mean. But then also when you then give me a compliment, which is very often, I then know that that's really genuine as well. So it's all like, because I just get the complete honest. Yeah, and we've been together for years, haven't we? Like 22 years.
But as a language, as an English language, we're the worst. We never ask, we never mean what we say, do we? So people always say, oh, what do you think about this? Be honest with me. Or somebody at work could be, what do you think about this piece of work? You know, be honest, tell me the truth. And you tell them the truth, and then they think, well, why did you tell me the truth? Because you asked me to. So my thinking is sometimes very black and white, very literal. You've asked me to be honest, I'm going to be honest. But actually, you didn't want me to be honest. Mm. So we're very vague with our language. And that makes it really difficult for neurodivergent people, particularly for autistic, because that vagueness, that kind of not really saying what you mean, it kind of trips us up. And we're like, well, does she want me to answer that? Does she not? Or did he really want me to go over there? Or you know, oh, no, I didn't want you to do it. So things like that. And I remember people used to say at work I was quite intimidating, quite intense. And I think one of those reasons was that a lot of autistic people, not everyone, but many, find it difficult with that kind of constant eye contact, sort of maintaining eye contact one-to-one. And the reason I explain about why I find it tricky is that when I'm talking to somebody, I have to process the words that they're giving to me. But then I find it really difficult to do that if I'm also having to look at your face and try and work out what your facial mannerisms, your tics, what are you thinking? So I'm not almost listening properly. So what I tend to do is if the person's talking to me, I kind of look away slightly, listen to the words, and then I'll turn back and answer them and give them kind of the answer they're looking for. But they might be thinking, oh, he's disinterested. He's being really rude. He's not looking at me. So other times I'll know that and I think, right, I must look at that person. So then I'm talking, I'm just staring into your eyes, and you can feel the uncomfortableness. And
you're
they're
scaring
like,
me now. Look, you're scaring me on Zoom.
You're quite intense. And I'm like, well, I can't win. You're either saying I'm too intense or I'm not interested. Yeah. I don't know which way to go.
And also, I think as well, like, you're really tall, which sounds really silly, but then so like if you're always leaning, and you don't mean to be intimidating, you're not intimidating, are you? No. But is that?
I think it's staring, it's kind of talking, and I'm very kind of to the point. If somebody asks me a question, I won't go around the house. I'll just tell them what they want to hear. So it's all these kind of things bundled up on a day-to-day basis. But I think, you know, that brings with it lots of positives as well. So I could be very organized. I can kind of hyper-focus. You know, I'm quite a good kind of thinker. So I'm quite creative and innovative in thinking about things in a different way, which is good in some aspects, but in some companies I worked for, they didn't necessarily want you to think differently. Mm. They're like, well, that's not how we think about things here. We think about this way. So,
and it's going to be very dependent on who you're working with, of course. Do you know what I mean? And how they, you know, present or live their life. What I'm going to do, I'm so interested. I'm kind of listening in and thinking, I think you can't help but have these conversations and go, oh, do I do that? Oh, do I do that? You know, so you're always trying to relate it to yourself, aren't you? But let's go to a little break. We're going to come back. I really want to delve into some of the other things that we've spoken about. And I want to talk as well about, because there is this strange mix of impulsivity. You know, just talk about the shopping scenario that you gave us there. Mm-hmm. How do you then marry up the kind of impulsivity with the rigidity? And I'd like to know about that, when that's happening in your, both of those things together in your brain, Kelly. So let's go to a break and pop back in a moment. Okay, welcome back. So thank you so much. This has been so completely fascinating. How do you then marry up, Kelly, and Hester, because of course you're both living together, so you're living this together, the impulsivity side of ADHD, which is something that happens with many people from an ADHD perspective, and the kind of rigidity, is that the right kind of term? Is that what kind of, what's the, you know, perfectionism you called it as well?
Yeah, I think it's autism. The anxiety of the impulsiveness.
Right, okay.
Not knowing what's going to happen, that change, that immediate change, right, without any notice.
So you're impulsive, but nervous about being impulsive. So how does that work then? Or does impulsivity not form part of your ADHD brain?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It does. And we egg each other on. And we're as bad as each other. We, you know, we make lots of impulse decisions, impulse buys. And then we look back and go, why did we do that? Because it's that kind of dopamine hit. Yeah. It's that dopamine seeking,
and
that
neither
we both do.
We don't stop each other. Like you said, no. We just like, oh, go on.
And I'll do it. And it's almost that kind of, I suffer the consequences afterwards. So I kind of think, no, I'd really like to do that. I want to go out. I want to do this. Let's go shopping. And then afterwards, maybe I'm just completely exhausted. Mm. So it's almost that balance of, do you know what? I still want to do things like that are impulsive, but I know, and the good thing is I now know that if I do something, maybe I will be, you know, exhausted when I've done that. Whereas before I wouldn't know. Yeah. And we used to talk about, God, why are you always so tired when you go for these, you know, when you're working for a company and you have to do like award ceremonies or customer events after a day's work. And I'd be exhausted for 2 days.
Right.
And say, is it something you've eaten? Did you drink too much? Are you allergic to something? And it's not, it's that high state of alert all the time that it just wipes you out. So I kind of have that balance. You know, I tend to follow Hester's lead with the impulsiveness, and I'm quite relaxed. And I say, okay, yeah, let's do that. And then maybe I'm just exhausted the rest of the evening, but I'll still go and do it because I like to still do things.
Yeah.
But I'm just aware now that, you know, there will be consequences, but I'm happy to manage those.
Mm. I've always kind of wondered, I've seen it at play, but it's just to kind of understand it a little bit more from your perspective is really interesting. Rejection sensitivity is another one as well that I think is lesser known. So how does that unfold in your lives?
Do you want me to take that one?
Yeah, you take.
So rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is also RSD for short, a lot of it is on TikTok now and things like that about it, lots on social media. And it's basically a real or perceived feeling of rejection. And it might not be rejection as in someone said they don't want to be with you anymore as a partner or a friend. It's actually hugely, when it, just think about linking it to work and things, send an email and the person doesn't reply quickly enough or with the response that you're hoping for. And you just go, oh my God, they must think I'm so stupid. I'm so silly. Oh my God, that's absolutely terrible. They're going to sack me now. This is it. They're going to call me into their office. And all these like, these feelings of rejection come and are just hugely overwhelming. Or it might be that if you've got, you know, a friend group and then you message a friend and then they don't reply and you're like, it takes a couple of days and you're like, oh my God, that's it. I've obviously annoyed them. I've done something to upset them. They don't want to be my friend anymore. So RSD is a huge part of ADHD. And I think it's about some statistic about 95% of people with ADHD have RSD. And it's just completely this feelings of sort of almost overwhelm, and you just can't shift them. And I was coaching someone the other day and she was saying, well, what can I do about it? And I was like, you just sometimes just have to ride it through, look at past evidence to know you didn't get sacked when you sent that email, that, not, you know, it wasn't even a bad email and the friend did still want to be their friend, your friend. It was just that you, you know, they were having a really busy week or the kids were ill or they were busy at work or whatever. So you just have to like look back and just think, no, it's okay. I know. And you know, inside it's your RSD. That's always the hardest bit, isn't it? You know that it's RSD and actually they do want to be a friend or work is fine or whatever, but that feeling is so intense, isn't it?
And I think at work, you know, that can cause a lot of misunderstandings because you might, you know, perceive a comment from somebody or a meeting or a task that somebody's given you in a slightly different way. And I think that then has negative kind of impacts, particularly between kind of, a team member and a line manager, because they've asked them to do something. They've picked up a certain tone or the way they've said it or, you know, whatever it might be, and suddenly escalates when it doesn't need to because there's nothing there to escalate. So it's a really important one I think people should know about. And maybe then start to see if they have got RSD when that starts to kick in. What are the triggers? What do I need to look out for? When is, oh, okay, it's starting, right? I need to kind of get back to kind of, you know, almost reality and go, actually, it's okay. I'm kind of reading more into this. But it's involuntary. It's not something that somebody's doing on, you know, on purpose. They don't know it's happening.
But, you know, it's kind of forewarned is forearmed, really, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I think that's the thing. If you know that that's the thing, you're saying that it's a big part of people with ADHD, living with ADHD, have got rejection sensitivity. But just knowing that that's a thing in your life and that's part of what you're living with, and then you can sort of take a step back and maybe give yourself a little bit of time and go, just let me analyze this. It's almost like stepping away from an email that you were going to write because you feel it and just going, let me just sit on that for an hour or two and then come back to it or whatever. So I just think it allows you the opportunity to see that you're not just weird, which is kind of what, do you know what I mean? Like, and that you can't deal with things in the same way.
Yeah. Like I was just sitting here thinking about an analogy for the declutter hub. Is like, you know, I remember my mum years ago coming round and she'd come to stay and the kids are quite little. And I remember she went, oh, so you don't like dusting then? Like, just like, oh my God, it really got my back up. So whenever she comes, she's very particular anyway, whenever she comes, I'm always like, oh my God, I have to be like, you know, almost sort of Mary Poppins with a white glove checking for dust because I'm so sensitive to this now. And then you then think, well, did everyone else think our house is this? And I'm thinking, looking back, the children were really young. All she could have done is gone, do you know what? Do you want me to help dust? It looks like, you know, whatever.
Or not said anything at all.
That's
also possible, yeah.
It wasn't even that bad, was it? Like, goodness me. But that's the thing. So, and I think when you have people who've got, inverted commas, cluttered homes, there's that shame and that guilt that comes with it. And someone comes around and goes, oh gosh, there's nowhere for me to sit here or whatever it is. And you've got these immense overriding feelings. But I just think talking about RSD and knowing it is a thing is huge because so many people just go, oh my God, I just thought that was me.
I think it is a big thing. And it's hard to know where that ends. And so not everybody who has been judged harshly and had mean things said to them, which is a big part of, you know, people then hold on to it even more and respond to it even more, like, you're like, then I need to go a little bit crazy with the dusting when they come and all that. So we kind of go too far the other way. But I think, you know, the reason why I wanted to spend so much time talking about some of these things rather than talking about strategies, which we're going to talk about in another podcast, don't worry, is so that people can sort of start to fill in the dots in between and go, okay, I get that part of it. And I get that I'm not a great timekeeper. And I get that I struggle with putting my washing in. And maybe there's something in this. Now, not everybody needs or requires a diagnosis of ADHD or autism or any other neurodiverse condition. No, you might not need that, but you might. If you're feeling down on yourself and you're feeling that it's having a negative impact on your world, perhaps it's something that you can seek out. It's not an easy thing to get. It's not an easy process to go through. So you need to go into it with your eyes open. But I think it's something that's available for you. And I think the nice thing about this community is that, as I said before, these light bulbs are going on and people are thinking, maybe it's not just me and maybe there's something else at play. Well, it is just you, but maybe it is something else at play that is a reason for why I feel and act in this way. And so, and I think that's the important thing, and that's the reason why I've delved a little bit deeper into some of the things. But I'm very conscious that I want to come back and I want to go into practicalities. I've loved today's conversation. I'm completely fascinated. It's not normally that I'm quiet here, but I'm literally just been taking a step back and listening to everything that you've been saying. So I hope that it's been useful, everybody. Do let us know whether any of the things that Kelly and Hester have talked about today resonate with you, and whether you've gone for a diagnosis or in the middle of seeking out a diagnosis or have had a diagnosis and how that has impacted your world. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to the Declutter Hub podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us in your podcast player so you don't miss an episode, and we'll see you next week.